Greetings, all of God's people. This is Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 150, and we are in the ultimate trial that Abraham is going through, as we began that in last lesson. And this trial is the ultimate that God can place on man, and in reality, it was the ultimate that he placed upon himself. Because in asking us to do something, he's not asking us to do something that he himself would not do. And so there was a purpose for this particular trial. It could have been something else, but God chose this one because of the ultimate eternal consequences, where he himself, that is the one who is the El Elyon, the Most High, is going to sacrifice his own son with the same intensity, with the same willingness that he was demanding from Abraham. And he was going to do it for the sake of Abraham's sons. So all the promises and the covenants that he offered to Abraham could be fulfilled. And so you see the mutuality in that. And that also reveals to us an awful lot of the God that we serve. Some people go through certain trials in life and they feel the first thing they say, well, that's unfair, that's cruel, that's not right and all that. And never dawns on them that the God who demands of them those kind of things or brings them upon them is the same God who is willing to do it himself and has done it and will do it yet. And he's done it many times in different ways, by oftentimes allowing his very righteous man to be sacrificed on the altar of the wickedness of the people around them. And it is for their sake. And some people don't realize that, how much God goes through that pain every time that one of his prophets is being killed by his own people. And it is out of his own love that he allows that sort of a repetition of the righteous dying for the wicked. And of course, what God did was the ultimate one, and in this case of Abraham, Isaac is not the righteous that is dying for the wicked. Isaac is in a different category here, but basically explains the same idea. That when God demands the ultimate from us, it is because he's willing to give us the ultimate. And he wants us to give everything, just like he's willing to give up everything for our sake. And so it's interesting the way he addressed Abraham. First in verse 1, he tells him, he's coming to Abraham to prove him, to test him, which is the ultimate test. And he has had many before that. And then he tells him in verse 2, and he said, we read, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, even Isaac. And you see the intensity building up and the stress that is placed upon the faith of Abraham and the demand that goes all the way to the ultimate, everything, leaving absolutely nothing behind. And that's the nature of God, that when he gives it from the heart all the way, and so he demands the same thing from us. And it's interesting the way he's addressing Abraham when he says, take now your son. Now, take now in English does not convey the meaning of the Hebrew, because the meaning of the Hebrew is kach now, which means please take. So it's not just take now, but please take. In other words, he's speaking to him as a friend. And this is a conversation between two friends. He's not commanding him. He's saying, please take your son. And you see the love and the affection that he has toward Abraham and the kind of friendship that they have between them, that God would use this kind of a language. And it's very rare to see that, and that happens only on a very rare occasions when the intimacy is so profound. And so it was with Abraham. He did not need to command him. He knew that God will do it, and so he can talk to him as a friend. Would you please take? And that's what he did. And so that's how the language has been inspired to be written, and that's exactly the language that he used himself. Kachna, please take. And then he tells him, you go to the land of Moriah. Now, the land of Moriah was not a particular one mount. It was an area that has several mounds there. It was a land, it was an area, it was a territory that included, later on, the Temple Mount, where the temple was being built in the days of Solomon. And so this whole area there, when you go over there, you see hills. And one of them was ultimately chosen to be the site of the temple. And the tradition is that this is exactly where Isaac was being offered. And of course, in Islam, you find out, trying to imitate that, and they claim that this is the place where, they altered this understanding, this reality, this knowledge about Isaac being offered, that God demands, that he's requesting the sacrifice of Isaac, and they say, oh no, he did not request the sacrifice of Isaac, he did that of Ishmael. Well, that's a different story. It's in essence irrelevant, because when it's not truth, of what value is it to insert information that is not true? One of these days they're going to have to face the judge of the whole earth and answer for it, all these lies, instead of just coming to him. Because it was in Abraham and in his seed that all the nations of the earth will be blessed, not in Ishmael's seed. And so it's a phony, unfortunate, false religion that doesn't have to be that way. One of these days they're going to come back to Father Abraham and have to go also through Isaac, who is a type of Jesus Christ, of the Messiah, and go through the same Messiah because they've invented their own Messiah. And unfortunately, that's the way the whole world is. You know, they all have false messiahs and false Christ and false gods and false everything. And so God says to him, you go and take your son, your only son, whom you love, and get thee into the land of Moriah. Now, the terminology of get thee, you miss it in the translation. In Hebrew, it's lech lecha, which is a very interesting. In other words, go to your way. Lech means go, and lecha, to yourself. In other words, go on your way. And that terminology has been used twice before that. The first time when God called Abraham out of the Ur of the Chaldean. And he and his father and everybody, we read in chapter 11 at the end there, they all went thinking that at the time that they are going to the land of Canaan. That is, his father, apparently God talked to Abraham, and Abraham told his father, and his father got excited, and they're all worshippers of God, not perfectly, they still had their problems with idol worship. But then, still retaining a good measure of the knowledge of God and having a relationship with God, so all of them were about to go to Canaan. Of course, God was not interested in the whole family, and so he caused them to remain in a land which they called Haran, after the name of the first born of the father of Abraham, of Terah, who died earlier, and so he got to a certain territory up north. In other words, he traveled along the route of the river up north toward the present-day Syria, northern Syria, and there he just... He found a place, an empty place, and he decided to stay there for a while. Obviously, God was working out all these details. And so, he remained there until he died. And it's at that point that God again came to Abraham and told him, Lech Lecha. Go your way. Go to your way. And that's when he came at age 75 to the land of Canaan, he and Lot and their entourage. And this is the third time that God is telling him, Lech Lecha. Go to your way. And when you go with God, obviously, not with somebody else. And it's only when we go with God, we arrive at our destination. And when people go their own way and do their own thing, they arrive somewhere else. That's unfortunately what the other son of Abraham, his descendants, have done. And so they ended up with another religion, another false messiah, another false prophet, their own book, mixed with truth and error in it. And this is not God's way. Anyway, he goes there to the land of Moriah, and of course, and he tells him, when you get there, and I'll tell you which particular mount I want you to offer him. And so he says, you get thee into the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell you of. So later on, apparently, when he was walking that direction with God, all this time walking with God. He didn't go there on his own. He didn't leave God behind. God was always with him. As David would say later on in Psalm 16, I have served the Lord always before my eyes. And when you walk with God, you can reach the ultimate, either in the test or the trial that you go through. You know, you achieve the highest apex of the test, and you reach, you know, the top of the mountain, and you reach the end of the way in the right place, not in the wrong place. And so when he goes with God. And in one of the mountains, when he arrived closely there, God told him, this is the one. And the tradition is, obviously, this is the one where later on God told David, this is where you build me the house. And the story, of course, at the time of the days of David was a little bit different. There was a plague upon Israel, and God moved David to do it, and he allowed the devil to inspire him also in that direction. And he brought a great curse, you know, pestilence on Israel. And then when he went to that particular mount, which belonged to the people of Jebus, and there was a king there that reigned over that little territory, he saw the angel of the Lord with his sword stretched. And this is the place where ultimately he built the temple through his son David, that is his son Solomon. Well, a lot of these things are all interconnected, and all those things are guided and led, you know, by the one who pulls all the strings, and that's God himself. And so Abraham, verse 3, rose up early. You know, he's not waiting, he's not weeping about it, he's not crying. You know, as I showed it in the movie, the Bible, you know, for those who have seen the movie, you know, that Abraham goes out there and he cries and he yells and he says it's unfair and all that, and then only finally, grudgingly, he gives up. This is not Abraham. That's not faith. You see, that's a concept of men. Of course he had his emotions with it. But these are two friends that ultimately, you know, that they closely know each other and respect each other very highly. And Abraham respected his creator very highly, knowing that whatever he does, he knows what he's doing, and it is for the best. And since he promised him that through his son Isaac he's going to offer him all the promises to come in the future, obviously, if he asks, requests of him, as it says, please take your son, he's going to come up with an idea. Since God is the one that kills and also makes alive, he's going to have to bring him back to life. So the resurrection was already on his mind. And he had faith in God, and he trusted in God. You see? And he knew that he would resurrect him immediately after that, or short time after that, to fulfill his promise. So that was always in the forefront of his mind. And yet, the enormity, you know, the trial of going through it also showed, you know, the ultimate willingness of Abraham to go all the way and do whatever God requires him, even though the law itself of offering a son is contrary to the law of God. You see, that was the law of the nations, but not the laws of God. And it is in his ultimate trust in his God, he was willing to do anything. And many of the prophets later on, they did a lot of things that would have seemed to be very strange, and many people would have argued with God. You see the faith of Moses when he began his journey with God. He was arguing with God. He was, you know, he was coming up with all kinds of excuses. Why shouldn't do it? Well, Abraham was not of that kind of faith. And then later on, Moses learned to have that ultimate faith that his father Abraham had. And the faith of Abraham was based on the fact that all of us must learn, and must learn sometimes the hard way, that only God is God. Whatever we have in life, including our own life, is not God. And we should not worship it and bring it to the level that is above God or instead of God. And so when God requested of his friend and told him, please take your son, he understood that God is God, and therefore his loyalty and faith and love and passion and emotions and feelings and obedience and willingness, you know, to give, everything must be to his God, and his son comes next, but not instead of God. And that is something that ultimately all of us must learn. And again, God did not demand Abraham to sacrifice his own life, but the life of his son, as an example of what the father was going to do later on also through his son. And for what purpose? You see, the ultimate sacrifice of Abraham was not just for himself, but for all those who will come from him, for all mankind, ultimately speaking. And so it was also with the father. The sacrifice that he gave through his son was not only for Abraham's sake, you know, the promises that he made to him and the covenant so he can fulfill it, not only for Israel, the people that came out of him in particular, among many other nations, but the one that he had chosen, but also for the rest of all of humanity. And so in this case, when Jesus Christ himself, just like Isaac, he did the same. He was willing to give himself, and he went all the way. And he gave up his life. And Isaac was willing to give his life. And obviously, you know, there must have been some kind of communication there between Abraham and his son. And Isaac at this time is already well versed in the law of God, in the ways of God, having a knowledge, close knowledge of God, obviously probably even met him several times when his father spoke to him. And so all that doesn't happen in a vacuum. And you have to take all that into account. When we think about this, you know, if we just don't take that into account, you know, the whole story seems to be a little bit off base in many ways. You know, a boy at this age, he's not a little boy anymore, he's a grown-up man, Isaac. He doesn't go through that, you know, without a relationship with God and relationship with his father, without faith, without knowledge and understanding. And that's the way God deals with us. He wants us to be fully aware of what we are doing and from the bottom of our heart, all the way, totally be willing to go through it. And so it's not an innocent child that Abraham is going to offer here, but a child that is no longer a little boy, but a man that knows God and does it from the heart himself. So the sacrifice had to be on the part of both Abraham and his son Isaac, as the sacrifice had to be done later on, and was done both with the full comprehension and understanding and attention and willingness of both the Father and the Son, the one that became Jesus Christ, the very Creator that now is requesting from his friend Abraham to do that. So when we study this matter, you know, we should take all that into account and then learn the lessons for ourselves. Who and what is our God? Is it God? Is God his God, you know? Is it the only God in our life, or all the things that we have in this life, including our own life, are God? And all those who are getting angry at God, or upset with God, you know, point the finger at God, obviously they have other gods. And God says, you shall not have any other gods before me, you see? And so Abraham understood it, fully comprehended it, and so God did not even need to command him to do it. He just requested. Just like saying, would you please? And that's the kind of a language that he used. Please take your son. And so Abraham is on his way, not doubting, not arguing with God, not withholding. He rises early in the morning. And that's what he does. And so we read in verse 3, and Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and he cleaved the wood for the burnt offering and rose up. That is, he himself goes through all that. He's not asking others to do it for him. He's very much involved in that, and in everything that he does, he's showing God, his friend, not just his God, but his friend, his very dear friend, the dearest friend he has, who is more important to him than his own son, and his own life, and his own wife, and his own riches, and so forth, as he did previously. He was more important to him than his own land, and country, and friends, and neighbors, and relatives. Twice he showed that, from Ur of the Chaldean the first time, then from Haran the second time. And so he's in that state of mind. That's why he's the father of the faithful, an example to all of us. And God is not requesting from us, you know, this awesome sacrifice that he did from Abraham. But there are times when we have children and they're on the verge of death. And some people get very angry at God at that point, or maybe get angry, you know, after that when the son died And they're not willing to part with that when it is the will of God, and we don't fully comprehend everything, and so people become bitter and angry, and we should not. If our eyes are on God, if He is our friend also, if we know that what He does and what He allows is for the best, then we have peace. Peace of God. And Abraham, throughout all this, with all the powerful, intense emotions and feelings, had peace, knowing that God will work it out, one way or the other. And so that's exactly what one of his sons, the Apostle Paul at Rome, says, one of the sons of Abraham. All things work for good. All things. No matter how bad they may be, even if your own life is taken away, or the life of your mate, or friend, or brother, whatever it may be, your son, your daughter, anything, your job, all things work out for good for those who love God, you see, and obey His will. And so Abraham, with that state of mind, he does everything. And in every act that he does, cleaving the wood, preparing, you know, the ass, saddling it himself, you know, getting the young man, getting Isaac and all that, in everything he proves total reliability on God and total faithfulness. And that's what God was looking for the sake of Abraham, for the sake of all of his descendants, for our own sake, we should do the same. And so he went to the place which God had told him, and on the third day, we read in verse 4, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off, and Abraham said unto his young men. So before he gets close to that, he lets the young men stay behind. This whole trial is between him and his God and his son, you see, and he does not want any involvement there of others, and obviously God inspires him also in that direction. And Abraham said unto his young men, abide you here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder, beyond this point, and we will worship and come back to you. So at this point, the young men don't know what's happening, and Isaac at this point still does not fully comprehend what is happening. He thinks that God commanded him to go and sacrifice to him, but doesn't know what, and so he's not suspecting at this point. But later on, obviously, there was a communication there. Verse 6, and Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, and his son obviously was not a little boy, so he can carry the wood, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. The fire means a stone, or a couple of stones with which, you know, they start fire. That was old-fashioned. And they went both of them together. And Isaac spoke unto Abraham his father, and said, my father. And he said, here am I, my son. And he said, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? By now Isaac begins to wonder. Something is missing. And he doesn't suspect that, no, nothing is missing. He's the one that he thought was missing. The sacrifice. And he's going to find out pretty soon. And Abraham said, God will provide himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. And it was not a wishful thinking. He knew that God himself will provide. That one way or the other, you see, there's going to be a provision from God, and we don't know exactly what was going through his mind, but maybe he thought, well, maybe, you know, the last moment, the last second, whatever it may be, or before that, God will say, okay, you've proved it, you're my friend, you're willing to go all the way, I am truly your God, well, here is a lamb. Whichever way it is, Abraham knew Isaac is his son, God gave Isaac to him, and through him he's going to have many children. So obviously, God is going to have to alter something there. And so with that absolute faith, that's exactly what he's telling him, and he knows it, and he means it, and he believes it. And so he says, God will provide himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went both of them together, and they came to the place which God had told of him, that he told him of, and Abraham built the altar there. So Abraham is the one doing it. You see, he's going through every movement of this process of faith, an ultimate sacrifice and the ultimate test, himself, totally involved in it. And he laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son. Now something happens in between here, of course, and the account doesn't give us all the details. And so he bound his son Isaac, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. You see? And obviously, Isaac is asking questions, Abraham is replying, and you know, there is something here that God hasn't chosen to record. But God himself was witness to it. The ultimate willingness of Abraham to give everything, proving that only God is God. And unfortunately, many of us have not reached this point where God is God in our life. We're still meddling around, you know, with other things, and we haven't reached the point where we can reach the ultimate test. But we must, as Paul said, it is through great tribulation, great suffering, great, you know, afflictions that we must enter into the kingdom. God is not going to offer us himself, as he told Abraham, I am your heritage. He is not going to offer up himself and his divinity and his, right, you know, and his eternity and riches and possessions and all that to anyone who is not willing himself or herself to offer everything. Now, we don't have much, but what we have is everything that we have. And that's all God is requesting from us. If we're not willing to reciprocate, just like God is willing to reciprocate, and he himself went all the way to the cross, and the Father was willing to go through it, emotionally at least, if not himself in person, his son did it, but he's the one that was causing the whole thing. If he's willing to go all the way, he demands from us, he requests from us, he wants us, and to begin with, we should get to the point where God doesn't have to command us, just say, would you please do that? You see? And we do it. We must reach that state of mind too. And so if we find ourselves, you know, whenever a little problem comes our way, begin to complain, you know, feel a little resentment, why me, God, and all that, you know, how long and all that, well, it's about time we sit down and have a good talk with ourselves. Where do we stand? How many gods do we have? You see, our job is it our God, our mate, is it our God? How many gods do we worship? You see, we must worship God and he alone, and no one else. And so Abraham is going through all that, proving in everything that he does that he ultimately is God's. And God is his only God. Nothing and no one comes in between. And so he led him on the altar, and Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. He was going to go all the way, if need be. Just like the friends of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, telling the king, you know, yes, you can kill us, you are the most powerful man on earth, but we're not going to bow down before you. You are not our God. God is our God. And if need be, we'll go into the furnace. You see, and they did. And God allowed them to go all the way in, into the furnace. And it is there that he delivered them. So they were dead in that sense. You know, the moment they were thrown into the fire, into the furnace, they were dead for all practical purposes. And yet that's when life began. And so this is what Abraham is going through, and this is what we have to learn. You see, life begins when we give it up. Not when we hold back to it. That's when we lose it. That's what Christ said. You know, those who keep their life are going to lose it, and those who give it are going to gain it. And so Abraham knew that very well, and we should know the same. And we should follow in that example, as Christ told us. That if we are going to hold on to our life, we're going to lose it. But if we are willing to give it up, that is when God tells us to give it up. As Paul would say in Romans 12, you know, to present our bodies a living sacrifice on a daily basis. Be willing to give it up. That is when it is required. Not for foolish things. Some people are risking their lives, they are tempting God, you know, by doing so. And this is not what God is talking about. And so Abraham was willing to fulfill the request of his friend, of his creator, of his God. You know, please take your son. And the Hebrew actually says something that you miss in the English, you know, in the translation. You see, there are certain things that you can never translate, and if you do, you have to explain what it means. But if you just translate, you get a totally different concept. In the English, for example, even here, though it is a translation in a Hebrew manuscript, that is, the Bible that is used in the synagogue, since they use English, they in the process also lose the meaning. But, you know, those who read it in Hebrew, they don't have that problem. And in the synagogue, they read it in Hebrew. But in verse 2, it says, speaking about the son, take your only son, whom you love, and get into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering. Now, the words themselves don't mean either offer or burnt offering in Hebrew. You see, he told him in Hebrew, Behaleu Leola. Now, what does mean Haaleu? You see, you have to find out so you understand what is the context and why God is using this kind of words and not others. He said Behaleu, which means raise him up, lift him up. Because what happens generally when they build an altar, it's higher, and then you put the wood on top of it, makes it even higher, and then you take the sacrifice, and you have to raise it up. And in doing so, you're raising it up to God, just like in prayers, you're raising your hands. And so the terminology is Vehaleu, depicts exactly what you are doing, that you are raising it up, you're exalting it, for God to accept it. And so you're losing that in the translation when you don't have the exact explanation of what it means. And then le'ola, the word ola in English was translated into burnt offering, and generally this is what was the ultimate fate of the sacrifice. But what does the word ola means? Vehaleu means to raise it up or to lift it up, and ola means that which was raised up. And so when Abraham obeyed the command of God, which was in a form of request, where he says, please do it, he was going through the motions of raising Isaac on top of the altar that had woods placed on top of it, and Isaac was the one that was raised up. But technically you might say that when you do that, if you don't stop, that is, if you stop at that point and you don't burn the sacrifice, you still have fulfilled the request. And in essence, Abraham was fulfilling the request of God, and God knew how far, you know, he was going to go with it. And obviously, he never meant for him to start the fire, you see, and burn him. He never meant for him to take the knife and literally, you know, slaughter him. Those were naturally the elements that would go into a sacrifice if you go through the entirety of the process, but he never meant for the entirety of the process to be there. He wanted the heart, the willingness, the mind, the desire to be there. And those were there in abundance, without hesitation on the part of Abraham. And so you see also the link later on to Jesus Christ. There were different modifications there in that sense, from the natural consequence of taking an animal and putting it on the altar, on the woods, and setting the woods on fire and burning it. And so this is what Abraham is going through. And so in verse 7, that is in verse 9, we read, and they came to the place which God had told of him, and Abraham built the altar. So you build an altar, that means you take a bunch of rocks, you put one on top of the other. That is a makeshift altar, because generally, you know, they just built them on a permanent basis. Well, here, anytime you wanted to build an altar, as the prophets did, as Abraham did, that is, and Isaac and Jacob and many other servants of God, you know, when you are just in the middle of nowhere, so to speak, you know, you just take rocks, you put them one on top of the other, and there you have an altar. And so he built the altar. You know, he himself lifted up the rocks. So you see, he's going through the whole process. And the sacrifice of Isaac began from the moment God told Abraham to do it, and Abraham says, yes, I will. That's when the process of the sacrifice began. You see? And so God knew it all along. He saw Abraham from beginning until the end, and he watched his attitude from the beginning until the end. Abraham was totally obedient. And so he's building the altar. And he's not complaining, and he's not arguing, and he's not weeping and crying and all that. And he's not doing it grudgingly. He's doing it. Because the faith is there. He knows his God. He knows his friend, and his heart is in it. Oftentimes, the problem with us, you know, when we walk with God, we don't have that kind of faith. Well, the whole matter should be settled to begin with. I know that what God says is right, I will do it, even though it doesn't look right, and, you know, in my sight, my opinion, the emotions are not there. People around me think I'm nuts and crazy. You see, and then we have come up with all kinds of excuses why we shouldn't do that, and all kinds of reasons. That's our problem. We haven't settled it in our mind to begin with by faith. He said it, I will do it. All the others don't matter. You see, and so we go through the process from beginning until the end. And God is watching us. And when He chooses, He intervenes. And so Abraham was going through the process. And it's not just through the motions, you know, without feelings and emotions. No, he was totally involved in it. Everything that he did, every act, every feeling, every emotion, every movement was offering his son. And so he built the altar. And then he laid the wood in order. And he's taking it one at a time. And he put it right in order to create, you know, that condition where he can put something on top of it without, you know, just the whole pile falling apart. So you see, everything is calculated with total obedience to God. And he bound his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Now, you got some little modifications here when you think about it. When you offer a sacrifice to God, when you go through the whole process, that is an animal, because here we're not talking about an animal, it's a human being. So obviously things are going to be a little bit different when God is requesting it. You see? They're not pagans, you know, they just take their kid and go through the process and do it like that. But when you take an animal, you take it before the altar. You go through the ritual slaughter. You slaughter the animal first. You let the blood gush out. You see? And then the animal is dead. And then you take the animal and you lift it up to God to be accepted. And it is accepted in that movement because you're showing that it is from your heart. It is symbolic for your own self. And God is accepting it. Then you lay it on the wood. And then you set the fire, or maybe the fire is already going on, since you have several other sacrifices in the temple. Well, there was no temple. Well, you set the wood on fire. You see, the process is totally different there and reversed. The animal is already dead by the time you put it on top of the altar, on top of the woods. And then you start the fire, and it consumes. As it burns, it consumes the animal. And that's a burnt offering. Everything is gone. And some sacrifices, that's how you offer them. And everything is consumed and nothing is left. And yet what you see here is something totally different. He's preparing the altar. Everything is fine. The woods are on top of it. That's the way it should be. But then he takes his son and he binds him. You see? He doesn't slaughter him, as you do with an animal. And he doesn't remove, you know, all the blood from the body and then puts him on the altar. Now you see him doing something that is different, because the whole process here with a human being is obviously necessitates a different way of doing it. And so you can see the differences there between a real sacrifice of an animal and this case. And then later on with Jesus Christ, you're going to see the same. And so he binds him, he puts him on the altar. With an animal, you don't need to bind it. You just slaughtered it. And so he puts him on the altar, and then he takes his hand, you know, that is his knife, to kill him. But you see, with the animal, you do it the other way around. You slaughter the animal first, then you take the animal, then you put it on the altar and you don't bind it. Then you set it on fire and it is consumed. And so you have to notice these differences here to understand what is happening. from the point of view of God and what is inspiring to be done. After all, Abraham offered sacrifices before that, and he never went through this kind of motions of doing it. And so there is no binding of a sacrifice in an animal. Here there is a binding of the sacrifice. And with an animal, you slaughter it first. There is no slaughtering of the sacrifice before you offer it. And then he's lifting it up. Well, this is the same as with an animal. And he puts it on the sacrifice. Only with an animal, it's already dead. Isaac is still alive. So it's a living sacrifice. It's a totally different kind of a sacrifice. And that was a purpose that God had in mind. A living sacrifice, willingly doing it, willingly submitting to it. And so, two are involved here. Abraham and his son. You see? Then you begin to understand what was going on later on the same mount 2,000 years later, with the father bringing his sacrifice there and going through the same motions in essence that is allowing it to be happening. Obviously, he's not doing it personally as Abraham does here. But you see the way it was happening here. And so, in verse 10, we read, and Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. You see, that comes at the end instead of in the beginning. And it is at that point. That's the point of no return. You see? Which is not happening in the sequence that you generally do with an animal anyway. It's at that point, verse 11, that we read, and the angel of the Lord called upon him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not your hand upon the lad. For the regular sacrifice, he should have been dead already now. Neither do you anything unto him, for now, you see, the angel of the Lord is saying it, now I know that you are a God-fearing man. And those who do understand and have eyes that are open, and have ears that are open, and have hearts that can understand, realize who is this person speaking here, the angel of the Lord. This is the one that became Jesus Christ. This is the one that, in essence, as he goes through this experience with Abraham, he thinks about his own sacrifice, where he himself willingly is going to have to do what Abraham here is going through willingly, and that reflects what his father is going to have to go through, and then what Isaac, he knows what Isaac is going through. And with that, he can sympathize because he himself is going to go through it himself later on. So you see the awesome drama that is happening here and the emotions and the feelings where four beings here are involved in it. Abraham and his son, the father and his future son. And this was the most pivotal act that is happening here that would determine for eternity the plan of God. And it's very, very monumental what is happening here. And so we have to notice every little thing, every little detail that is happening here and to understand it. That Isaac was bound and then he was lifted up, but he was not slaughtered with a knife. A regular sacrifice, it's first slaughtered with a knife, it is lifted up and it's not bound, and then it is set on fire. You see, after it was already killed. Because that's the way it becomes a burnt offering. And so in essence, Abraham fulfilled that. He took the sacrifice that was Isaac, he built the altar, he lifted the sacrifice and it was accepted. He put it on the wood, you know, he put his son on the wood that he arranged himself. And what was lacking only was the knife with which he was going to slaughter him. And you see the sequence of order here is quite different. And so Jesus Christ later on, as he's referring to his own reality, that he had to go through exactly here, what he's going through here with Abraham. After all, as we read in the scriptures, I believe in Isaiah 62, speaking about his own people, verse 5 or 6, as the children of Israel were going through the wilderness, and you know, they were going through all kind of afflictions, thirsty and hungry and hot and all that, and other afflictions. It says there that in all their afflictions, he was afflicted. You know, just like a parent when he sees his child that is sick and afflicted, he feels it. Sometimes his pain is even greater than that of the child. And so you can see the father going through that, and you see Jesus Christ at this point, who was not Jesus Christ, but he was a Savior. He was always a Savior. He was always the anointed Savior. And so he's going through that emotionally. And he's thinking about his own fate in the future, which he himself willingly is going to have to go through, just like Father Abraham did in Isaac. And you see the interconnection there between the two. The four of them, actually. The two supreme, Father and Son, you know, divine beings, and the physical, Father and Son. And this is what makes Abraham the father of the faith. You know, he ascended to the level in that sense of the Father, and his Son ascended to the level of the one that became Jesus Christ. And so, obviously, because of that, God was going to offer him himself, his possessions, his divinity, to him and to his sons, all those who are willing to go through the same process. And that's why Christ told us, we must also follow in his footsteps and all the way go to the cross, whatever our cross is. Well, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people.